It's Breaches and Brews with Riviel Data Security.
Welcome to Breaches and Brews. My name is Rob Nielsen, and today I've got my co-host Keaton Tanzer with me. Hey, Keaton, how's it going?
Doing good, Rob. I'm excited for today. It's going to be a blast.
Hey, I'm excited as well. This is the first episode of Breaches and Brews, so please bear with us as we get our bearings and get going. But this is just a podcast that's meant for you, the listeners, to connect with one another, connect with the guests that we have on, and connect with us with any questions that you may have about our topics. We all work at Riviel Data Security. We're based out of Washington State, and we help financial institutions with information and cybersecurity assistance. So the point of this podcast isn't to push Riviel. We really just want to get some content out there to bring people together and not have to reinvent the wheel, but talk about struggles that we all may be having in different areas of cybersecurity regarding financial institutions. So Keaton, what are we looking at today as far as our topic and our guest and what the listeners can expect?
So on today's podcast, we have a very, very special guest, Randy Lindberg. He's the founder and CEO of Riviel Data Security. We have Mount Rushmore of last-minute items you buy before a board meeting. We're going to be talking about the webinar that Randy has coming up. The topic on that is how to present cybersecurity to your board of directors. I think especially at the beginning of the year is when a lot of people are starting to plan for the upcoming months, getting those findings remediated, starting to get that plan together and how to approach the board with that plan. It's a great, great show. I'm really excited to get into it.
Very good. Hey, Keaton, before we get into it and before we talk too much security, Breaches and Brews, kind of an interesting name for a podcast when we're talking about financial institutions and security. Do you want to explain that to us? Do you want to let us know kind of what the Breaches and Brews concept is? And then we can jump in with our guest and get going.
Yeah, so Breaches and Brews, it's funny, is when we were coming up with this idea, we were joking that there are two different kind of brews that help us get through a typical day. You have your coffee or you have your beer. Some people got to get their coffee in the morning, they get their beer at night or vice versa. I'm not one to judge, Rob. So when we were thinking about this is just how can we talk to cybersecurity professionals, people in this industry, kind of in a laid back view, something that we can get their insights, their fun stories, maybe helpful tips and tricks that they wouldn't necessarily give on a typical webinar or forum, just more personal about their stories.
All right. Well, along those lines, what do you got? You got a coffee? You got a beer? What are you sipping on today while we talk with Randy?
Yeah. So we're recording this on Friday. So I have a nice Kona Kua Bay India Pale Ale, AKA the thing that's in the back of my fridge. It's delicious. It's crisp. We're not sponsored by Kona Beer, but if they're interested.
It's a
delicious drink. What about you?
Sure. I've got Riviel's triple threat brew. Something we'll get into in future podcasts and talk a little bit more about, but Riviel Data Security recently partnered with a local coffee company in Washington State, and we are going to be releasing and sharing with some of our clients and some of our the friends of Riviel, I will say, a coffee brew that we've got coming out, and we're pretty excited about that. So speaking of Riviel and Washington State, let's have Randy jump in here. It looks like he's joined us. Randy, thanks for taking the time today to jump on and talk security with our listeners. Hey, what do you have in your mug over there in Washington?
Sure. Yes, thank you guys for having me. I'm pleased to be the first inaugural podcast guest. No pressure there at all, right? I should have seen that one coming when we started talking podcast.
So being our first guest, Randy, you are automatically our first reoccurring guest. And that's kind of how it works in the podcast world.
Sure. I figured that might be the case. So in the spirit of the name, Brews and Breaches, I decided to go with two parts. My first part is just a regular cup of coffee. It's not the Riviel Triple Threat Brew. It's just, I think it's Food Club or something like that. And then when I finish this, I'll probably go to the fridge and get myself a Kona as well. Although it's probably going to be a big wave. Equally refreshing. I think it's a lager.
Again, not a sponsor, but maybe.
Randy, before we get going on board presentations and, you know, some of your insight as to how we can better present to our boards and prepare our boards and inform our boards about information security, can you tell us just a little bit about what got you to this stage in your career? I would imagine as a little boy, you didn't dream of cybersecurity and specializing in risk assessments like you do. Not to age you or me, but when we were young boys, cybersecurity wasn't a thing. So how did you get to this? How did you get to this stage in your career? And can you just kind of give us some background?
Sure, absolutely. Yes, and you're right. I didn't actually dream of doing cybersecurity. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I didn't even hear the word cyber. Well, I didn't hear the word cybersecurity until I got into the Air Force. That was 1998. And yes, I'm dating myself there. But in college, security wasn't a thing. I was just learning how to code in some cases, even though I'm definitely not a coder. I was learning about management information systems, getting packets from point A to point B, just at a very light look at those things in college. And then when I went on active duty in the Air Force, they sent me down to Montgomery, Alabama, of all places. And they said, not only are you going to be the network manager of this group of 2,300 software developers, you're also going to be the information system security officer. So once I figured out how to say that and how to spell it, I started to learn about security. And I think what drew me to security was that it's kind of a layer of complexity on top of a layer of complexity. So IT is always, so let me go back a step, even business is always changing. IT is often a driver of that change, and IT is always changing. Therefore, security is always changing. So I consider myself kind of a perpetual student, not in a formal sense, but I love learning. So I was immediately drawn to security in that role that I had. So from, 1998, 99 through today, I've loved security. Risk assessment specifically, if I could pick a specialization within the security field, it would probably be risk assessment. When I got out of the Air Force and became a security consultant, I picked up NIST 800-30, the risk assessment guide. And it had conveniently, it just had come out, I think, in July of 2002. I'd have to go back to my notes or some dates and look at that. But I picked up the document. It came out in July. I looked at it in October, and I just thought, man, this is the future of security. This ties security to the business, where you're measuring risk. You're making decisions for the business based on that risk. So that, to me, was very exciting. I would say that while risk assessment has become more popular since 2002, certainly, it still isn't quite mature enough where it is actually tying security to the business.
Beautiful. Thanks for that. It's funny. I think you picked up NIST like some people picked up Harry Potter, and you were like, this is just the most amazing thing in the world. Have you ever thought like what wires got crossed to make that? Because I've read NIST, and I got to tell you.
Yeah, that's a fair question.
I didn't have the same affinity.
No, that is a fair question. I've had people affectionately say over the years that, man, you actually like this stuff, don't you? And I say, yes, I truly enjoy the process of assessing risk, managing risk. Again, that we do all parts of security, but that is the one thing that I've always been drawn to, simply because of just the nature of it, tying security to the business. So yeah, it's, I don't know what wires got crossed, because I've not, quite frankly, in the last 20 years, I've not talked to a lot of people that actually enjoy doing risk assessments. people ask me, they're like, what's the deal, man? How do you actually like this? I don't know. I pick on my wife for being an accountant. She enjoys accounting. That makes me want to poke my eyeballs out with spoons. So everybody has their thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, Randy, along those lines, Keaton and I are working with, whether it be information security officers or, maybe a teller that has been thrown yet another hat at a smaller financial institution to oversee or manage some sort of cybersecurity function. What advice do you have for them as far as, if they're new to the role or if they're just someone that's maybe uncomfortable with security, the changes in security and the ongoing changes in our industry?
Boy, that, I don't think I've ever been asked that question before in my entire life. But we do have clients who are put in that role quite frequently just because of the nature of particularly smaller organizations who, like you said, wear multiple hats. Security might be one of those hats because they need somebody who can, you know, deal with computers easier. So they get that role. I would say that if somebody's been given that role, they're not, maybe not like me, who I picked up, you know, NIST 800-30 instead of Harry Potter, somebody who really enjoys security. If that's not them, I would find something more enjoyable to read, like this podcast, as an example. The whole purpose of it is to be a little less dry, because security can be a dry topic. If I think back to when I was first getting into security, I was studying for my CISSP. And at the time, again, I'm dating myself. I think I've already done that. But at the time, there was literally one book to read to study for the CISSP. It was a gray book. It had red writing. I don't recall the title. It might have just been Information Security. But that was the book, unless you were in the military and had the Rainbow Series, long story. But that was the book to study. And I kid you not, every single time I read that book, whether it was in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, after a cup of coffee, and I don't drink caffeine, I would get about one page into it and I would fall asleep every single time. It wasn't like, oh, I'm tired and I've now fallen asleep this one time. Every time I picked up that book, I fell asleep. So those people who have been, saddled with that extra duty that really isn't their cup of tea, it's all about finding something. There's more than one book out there now. Obviously, cybersecurity has grown quite a bit in the last 20 years. So I would find something that's readable. It might not even be the right topic, but if it's readable, you can get through it without falling asleep every time. And it's, information security, cybersecurity, whatever you want to call it, it builds on itself. So once you learn one thing, it's easier to learn the next thing and the next thing. And what those people will eventually realize is that, that while the underlying technology and tools change, it's more about the principles. So network engineers, for example, their job is to get packets from point A to point B. Security people, our principles are all about getting packets from point A to point B securely. So just learning one thing, that they can get through without falling asleep, and then learning that next thing, finding books or podcasts or webinars that are more enjoyable, I think is going to build that foundation that they can grow into maybe not a security expert, but somebody who gets the fundamental concepts of security.
Sure. So that's the infancy of getting into security. That's starting to understand it, starting to get, your feet wet, you're interested, you're thrown into this position and you start to get a better understanding, right? You start to learn stuff. You start to make mistakes, learn from those. Everything that typically happens in that growth period. And now you're reporting to the board. So this goes back to your webinar, right? So you're reporting to the board and you know a lot. You're super smart. You have all your analytics. You know exactly how many emails were sent out, exactly how many emails bounced, exactly how many people, all of these different things. Is there a common mistakes that people make? Because now they're coming from a posture of, well, I know more than you, right? So now they're having to downplay it. Are there mistakes people make when they're trying to report very technical data to maybe a not so technical board? Like if you were to say two mistakes.
Sure. Yeah, and I would say the two biggest mistakes I think that people, either security people or people responsible for security as an extra duty, two of the biggest mistakes they make are not organizing the security program into digestible chunks and then not putting action items up front for the board. So what I mean by that first one is that blasting statistics and vanity metrics into the report, just like you mentioned, number of emails blocked or spam messages blocked, those kinds of things, those, I would call those vanity metrics. And I don't want to pick on anybody who currently reports those, but putting those things into the report just to show, for example, a particular tool is doing its job, that doesn't lead the board to any action or decision they have to make. It doesn't really guide them to do anything. They look at it and they go, yep, great. That tool that we spent money on is doing its job. That number proves it, great. It's just kind of extra information that they don't really need during, you know, they're typically looking at this report during a board meeting, whether it's monthly or quarterly or even yearly. They're not spending a lot of time. And typically with board members, as you guys know, they're not security people. I think that's going to change in the future, but they're not security people. They're business people. They're finance people. That's why they're on the board of a financial institution, right? So they're not security experts. They think about security a few times a year. So what we try to do, and what I would recommend to anybody reporting to the board, is to take the overall cybersecurity program, break it into chunks that are more digestible, organize the program in some way that you're not looking at this big giant glob of, you know, 120 or 200 individual security controls. Break those things into categories and report on those in such a way that as the board sees that over time, they're going to know what to expect in bucket one and bucket two and bucket three. So as a couple of examples, we have what we call major security elements of the program. So we break it into things like risk, compliance, the program itself. And we have our categories. I talked to a potential client just the other day. They have a different approach. They've broken their security program into what they call their seven layers of defense. I thought it was a really cool idea. My hope is that we can work with them to mesh the two ideas together and come up with something really cool for them. But however you go about breaking up the security program, rather than just throwing one big blob into a report and saying, hey, here's everything about our security program, break it into digestible chunks, categories that make sense for you and for these people who are not cybersecurity people, they're finance people.
Sure.
The second one, putting action items up front. I think that the purpose of the report to the board gets lost in a lot of cases. So when I mentioned putting action items up front in the report, in the meeting, that's really the design there is to help distill down the noise of cybersecurity into actionable steps that the board needs to take. So they're meeting, they're looking at the report, and they need to do something with it. To be effective board members, they need to do something with that report. So putting action items up front is basically saying, here's what we need from you, board members. Please focus in on these things, make your decision, and tell us which direction to go.
Sure.
Absolutely. And then framing it in a way where I'm assuming board members are a lot of people like me, started, you know, business, sales, organization type work that over time had worked themselves into that position. So they're not necessarily, now luckily I've been in cybersecurity for a number of years now. But when I first got into it, I wasn't necessarily the most technical person as far as security controls and regulations go. You know, I was more probably what they're at, the Zig Ziglars, the KISS, keep it simple, stupid, right? Sure. And so when sure. So when you come from that mindset of got to keep it simple, you know, what's the easiest way to explain this? And then somebody comes in and they're like, here's all this complex stuff that I have no idea. I think that's literally how it goes over somebody's head. So breaking it up into those bite-sized chunks where it's like, this is obtainable for you, not to understand, but more to grasp. More to be like, okay, yeah, I get where we're going. I understand what you need, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So along those lines, Keaton, when you and I are working with our clients and our prospective clients, one thing that we've talked about is the struggle of conveying the real risk that their institutions have without scaring or intimidating them. Randy, can you talk to our listeners just a little bit about how to explain their institution's risk to their board, but not use scare tactics, not have the board walk out of the meeting and go, oh my goodness, you know, my bank or credit union is not going to be safe in the world that we're living in.
Yes, absolutely. In the cybersecurity world, of course, what we're protecting against, it is very scary stuff. You can lose a lot of money. An organization can be harmed significantly from a security breach. So there is an element of fear. And a lot of vendors used to use that, you know, FUD, that fear, uncertainty, doubt, as that lever. You know, fear is a very powerful emotion. So there's a tendency to use that lever to try and get people to do something, whether it's a board member spending money on something or signing off on something. I don't advise that for the very reasons you mentioned. They see bad stuff in the news and are nervous enough as is. So for me, as I mentioned, you know, back to the risk assessment, it's the tie between security and business. Two things I love, security and business. And from a business perspective, looking at security, it's still all about dollars and cents. So business people speak in financial terms. So if you do a risk assessment, the traditional method is to rate things as high, medium, or low. And I've done webinars and presentations on this in the past, where that really doesn't tell a board member who is a business person, they're focused on finance, they get the numbers. If you go in and say, board members, we need to spend $10,000 to reduce this risk from high to medium, that doesn't actually mean anything if you think about it. Well, what is high? What is medium? And going from high to medium, what does that mean? What does that gain us? So the fix for that I've found is to speak in in business terms, which is financial. So if you can measure risk, not in high, medium, low, but in dollars and cents, dollars that the organization could lose if a risk is realized, that's where you can speak to them and you can go to the board and you can say, we need to spend $10,000 to reduce this risk and it will save us $200,000 in measured risk. And the ROI on that, you know, you can do the math and figure out the ROI. That is the language that business people speak. It's finance. So I know that might sound intimidating to somebody who's used to just, you know, marking things as high, medium, low, because it's easy, right? It's easier to do that. That's why the industry does it. But there are methods. And as you probably would have guessed, dear listeners, we have those methods in place where you can go in and you can measure risk in financial dollars and cents. So, but there are tools out there that you can use, like Monte Carlo analysis. You know, the finance industry, the insurance industry, they use Monte Carlo analysis regularly to try to predict outcomes of essentially games of chance. That's why the name Monte Carlo is attached to that method. But if you can speak in dollars and cents, present the business case for enhancing security controls or putting in new security controls, that's going to get you a lot further than going in and saying, hey, we have a high risk and we need to spend $10,000 to make it a medium risk. Again, that's not telling the board anything when you're speaking to finance business people.
Yes, right? Keep it simple, stupid.
Yes. Absolutely.
You don't lock the doors at night. It costs $10 to lock the doors and it saves yourself.
Yep.
Right? Yes,
yep.
Keep it simple.
Exactly.
Another question that I thought of is how important is consistency in presenting and particularly reporting to the board for their understanding? Can you talk a little bit about whether it be month over month or year over year consistency? And maybe one or two recommendations that you'd have for our listeners in that regard.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think consistency is very, very important. And for the most part, what we see across the board, banks and credit unions, the report formats are similar. There are some things that I would like to change just in general about, you know, what is typically reported. But it is very important to keep the report format consistent, what you're reporting. And if we go back to an earlier topic about those categories of, you know, within the security program, if you report in that kind of a framework consistently, the board members are going to develop a better understanding of the security program, again, because it's in digestible chunks. So if they get the report, they see their action items up front that cues them in on what they're going to need to look at later in the report in order to take action on those items, make a decision or do something. So, you know, for us, I'm a little biased here, of course, but according to the way we report for the boards of our clients, being consistent is essential. So all of our reports follow the same format. There's an executive summary, there's a findings table, there are technical details. Our clients know exactly what they're going to get and where they should focus their attention on. Same thing with board reports. The details within each section and each report page will change, of course, over time, but presenting useful action-oriented information in the same format every time will help guide their attention to the right place. So again, for me, it's about breaking the security program and therefore the report that corresponds to the program and presents that information into logical chunks that make sense for these business people who don't think about security every day. And in doing that, you're essentially training them on basically how to view cybersecurity, how to think about it in digestible chunks.
Does frequency help? So like how often you're doing it?
It does, I would say, to a degree, because some organizations, some boards just don't want a monthly report. They don't want to see it every month. They want the annual report and they're fine. So there are some constraints that are outside of our control as security people or people that have been tasked with security. But obviously, the more they see the information, the same kinds of information, the more they're going to get used to it. So if there's a way to get even a sub report, if you will, kind of a smaller monthly report into the board reporting package, and when it's normally just once a year, I would absolutely advise somebody to do that, because as you guys know, you can't not make critical decisions on security for a year. So, and I would like to think that no financial institutions are waiting a year to report to their board. Hopefully it's more often than that, even if it's a subcommittee of the board. But yeah, at least monthly, if you can get some kind of information to them, and certainly a full report quarterly is helpful. And then every year, the report is probably going to be bigger, because they need to not only look at the normal monthly or quarterly reporting, they're going to be approving policies, approving strategic direction, those kinds of higher level things that do only happen once a year.
So we have a game that we like to play, Randy. It's called Mount Rushmore. Very, very simple. What we like to do is we like to pick our four favorites of a topic. So what we're going to do is we're going to do the Mount Rushmore of things you're going to bring to a board meeting. I'll give you an example. Mine would be tie, laser pointer, reports, and donuts.
All right.
So we'll give you a second to think. Rob, if you want to give yours.
Sure.
We'll give you a second to think.
If I'm thinking board meeting, I would always say Tic Tacs, a notepad. Always got to bring coffee to stay awake during others' presentations if they're not directly relevant to information security. You might be falling asleep a little bit. And anytime I coffee, I'd better bring a Tide to go pin, because I have spilled on myself no less than three times while we've been recording the podcast.
Oh gosh. Can I cheat and steal some of your guys's?
Absolutely not.
Dang it. Well, I can't bring a notepad then, because Rob would bring
it. No, go for it. Go for it.
I would bring, I can't bring reports either. I would bring my phone, and while I hate to sound salesy, I'm just really excited about how our platform looks on a mobile device. So if anybody asked me a question in the board meeting, I could scroll through the Action Center and see exactly what the details were that I needed to respond to. So I'd have my phone. I would have some water, because I'm not a presentation guy, so my mouth might get a little dry if I was up there presenting. Well, I would probably have a notepad and a laser pointer. I actually bought my own laser pointer after I started to do a number of presentations. I can't say either one of those. So I got phone, water. I can't bring donuts because you brought those. So I would bring bagels. I don't know. Are those healthier than donuts? People are looking for health food these days. So maybe some carrot sticks. I don't know.
Some sort of snack, maybe some sort of snack, some sort of, again, thing to maybe break the ice, it almost seems like.
Yeah. And then I would say a Rivial coffee cup, just because the Yeti mugs went over really well. Everybody likes them, and it's kind of a conversation piece.
So again, this isn't a Rivial podcast at all. So not not plugging us one bit. But if I were to be somebody that were to do that, what I would say is we give amazing client gifts. And a couple of years ago, we gave Yeti mugs that had our very tasteful logo and name right across the front. And it was just clean and classy. Again, not a Rivial podcast, not plugging it, but it was wonderful.
That might get edited out. I don't know. But it sounded good. So I think in a roundabout way, did I get four items?
I think you did.
I think I listed actually about eight or nine, but most of them are yours. So I had to cheat.
I think beautiful. I think we'll be all right. Hey, Randy, thanks for joining us today. We've got just a couple of questions to leave our listeners with. You had mentioned during our conversation earlier that one of your biggest strengths in your role would be risk assessment. And I think it's important to mention that you worked at a financial institution before starting your own company. What is your least favorite task or what was your favorite task to outsource? We're living in a more and more outsourced world. What was your favorite task to outsource within information security?
I'm going to just pick on the business continuity people in the world. And I apologize to all of you folks who do business continuity and like it. But as we talked earlier, I love risk assessment. Most people don't. I just really, really don't like business continuity. So when I showed up at a bank and as the information security manager, they said, oh, by the way, did you know that you're also doing business continuity? I said, no, I didn't realize that, but I've done DR before. I'm not a big fan of business continuity, which is, I call it staplers on desks and people in chairs. That's not really technology. It's very important, just not exciting to me. So the first thing I did with business continuity when I got to that bank was I outsourced it, admittedly. So again, apologies to the business continuity people of the world, but that's just not my favorite thing in the world to do.
We've all got those things. Thanks for sharing.
Certainly.
All right. Last question. My last question. If you had to say, we sum this up, right? What are the biggest takeaways that somebody that's listening to this that was in your position, maybe is doing the reporting, their biggest takeaways to improve their reports to the board?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, Keaton, because I feel like I kind of wandered around in my answers a little bit. So to sum everything up, or at least put a fine point on it at the end, I would say just pay attention to the metrics that you're reporting. So as I mentioned before, number of spam messages blocked or emails blocked by your filtering tool, just not helpful for the board. It's a great number for you to know and look at and make sure the tool is working, but the board isn't going to do anything with that. If that number goes up or down, they really don't care. As long as it's not, you know, zero. As long as it's doing its job, they don't care. There's no action to take. So if you're paying attention to the metrics, excuse me, for example, you know, just maybe kind of a silly example, but the overall compliance of the organization. If that number goes up or down dramatically, you know, up is good, down is bad, the board can take action on that. So that's a metric that they would appreciate. They can look at that and they can make a decision to improve the security program. So just as, you know, two examples, emails blocked by the message filter or email filtering tool doesn't help them, doesn't give them a decision to make. Overall compliance of the organization, that's something they can take action on and fix.
Awesome.
Great. Great. And I think along those lines, Randy, we'll close things up here. Yeah. If any listeners have any specific questions that we may not have answered today, feel free to listen to or join the webinar that we've got coming up. We have all of the links on our website to all of this content. Again, we're not trying to push Rivial. We really just want to work smarter, not harder, and bring people together and utilize the info that we all have. But if you do have any questions that we didn't get answered or you want to connect with Randy, Randy is on LinkedIn. His name is Randy Lindeberg, LINDBERG. And you can also feel free to connect with us or ask us any questions. We'll be very responsive by emailing us at info@rivialsecurity.com. We'd love to hear from you and answer any questions that we might be able to. So until next time on Breaches and Brews, cheers. please listen responsibly, and we appreciate you being here.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.